Harry's Razors. Does it get any better than a Harry's Razor?
It doesn't. It's smooth, it's silky, and it's fun.
I was just at a traveling in a hotel, and I had my Harry's Razors. It kind of made me feel like I was at home, number one.
Mm.
But number two, I didn't want to go home without it. I made sure that before I left, you know how you do the final check? I thought, did I leave that Harry's Razor somewhere in that bathroom? I did not.
So, Don, one of the things that that I have just invested in is the second Harry's Razor.
Mm.
Because I travel, as you know.
Right.
And it's always a pain, or sometimes I forget my Harry's Razor.
Yeah,
because it's in the shower at home.
Right.
I'm in a hurry. Now I have one in my travel kit, and I have one at home.
You're a man of means, Scott Warr. I don't even know if Donald Trump
has two Harry's Razors.
Yeah, I don't know.
The best part about Harry's Razors is you don't need to be a man of means to have a Harry's Razor.
Talk to me, my brother.
Well, you can start, if you haven't tried Harry's, you can get a Harry's starter kit for $10. Mm,
you need a TRN code for that.
You do. You go to harrys.com and put in the code TRN, and you get $5 off your first purchase. And you can get the Truman set for $10. It comes with a handle, three blades, and some shaving cream or shaving gel. I like the shaving gel. I'm a gel guy.
I'm the cream guy. You said last time you're a cream guy.
No.
You went
gel
back to gel.
I've never even tried the cream because I know that I'm not
going to
like it.
I'm going back to that old podcast, and I'm going to check it out because I thought you committed to the cream team.
No. I'm a gel.
All right.
But here's something we do agree on.
Yes.
And that is the shaving balm.
Oh, yeah.
Which is
the aftershave
lotion? Aftershaving balm. We've talked about that. In fact, before we started this little ad, Freeman was just talking to me and said, hey, we need to get some more of that.
Mm. Well, there's no doubt about it. Anytime you have a chance to order me extra, Scott, if you're making an order, put me down.
So, gift-giving season, you know, Valentine's Day just passed. We're getting into, today is St. Patrick's Day.
You might see that I've carved out on my face.
Shamrock?
A shamrock. And you can do that with a Harry's Razors.
So Harry's Razors, it's a great gift for yourself. It's also not only an inexpensive gift, but probably one of the best gifts that you will ever give to a loved one.
Well, you know, $10, Scott. How many times is a person going to shave and think of you during that month after month? They're not going to wake up a day without dragging that across their face and going, man, Scott Warr gave that to me. He's a good guy.
Yeah. And they're just good quality. The blades, I can't say enough about the blades.
Made in Germany.
Is the reason why we're talking about Harry's, frankly. It's not because it's inexpensive. The reason we're talking about Harry's is the razor, the blades themselves. I've never tried anything like it.
Scott, do you think they're self-sharpening? Because they last a long time.
They last a long time.
Yeah. So go to harrys.com, put in the code name TRN, and get ready for the shave of your life. Tailwind Nutrition. Scott, tip of the trail. That's where we started. That's our roots. We're going for a tip today. And I have a tip.
Think of your tip. Before you do, I just want to tell you one of the reasons why I like Tailwind Nutrition. The calories are easily absorbed, and it doesn't give you the gut bombs.
There's no running with a gut bomb, Scott. If you've got a gut bomb, you're sitting on a rock.
You're
going
to explode.
Go away.
You're
going to
explode. A gut bomb inherently explodes.
Just by definition, a bomb is going to explode.
Why would you want to jeopardize your run with an explosion?
Even a good training run.
And there's a couple different definitions of explosions.
And some of the ones that are the worst are the ones that don't happen, that are just internally manifesting and just bubbling up.
Yeah.
That's the gut bomb you don't want.
So what's your tip of the trail, Don?
My tip of the trail is getting back to the basics. And that is when things seem to be a little bit awry and things are going sideways and you're scratching your head and you're trying to figure out what's going on with my racing, you need to get back to basics.
Put one foot in front of the other.
And whether you're in the middle of a race and you need to gather it back in, simplify. And that's one of the things Tailwind does. It simplifies things for you. It gives you the electrolytes. It gives you the calories. And it gives you the hydration. They do the simplification for you. Almost like a math equation. Well, you press equals when you drink a Tailwind.
The nice thing about it is you don't have to worry about taking a goo and taking your salt and taking your liquids. You can get it all in one.
A guy would have to stop at a rock and put some water in and then measure out carefully his sodium and then find some type of
some honey from the honey bear.
He would have to chase a bee down to find the hive, and all of this takes away from your finish time.
Unless it's a fast bee going in the right direction.
Well, that's true. Always go race direction if you're chasing a bee. And Tailwind has done the chasing for you. Jenny and Jeff have both gone and raced the bees, chased them down, and made the perfect drink.
Tailwind Nutrition is made by ultra athletes for the ultra athlete.
Go to our partners page, click on the Tailwind Nutrition banner, and place yourself in the middle of their aid station and get yourself some Tailwind.
Are we recording?
Dr. Romanoff, you're probably very experienced at professional interviews. This is not one of them.
Come on. Don't put yourself down.
we are very casual. That's a good word.
Ashley, were you expecting a professional podcast?
No, I wasn't. Apparently not. Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
And it was a miserable, miserable day. Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott Warr.
And I'm Don Freeman. And it is another grab bag, drop bag edition.
Extravaganza.
Which, you know, and you know they're my favorite, right?
I know they're your favorite.
And what makes it even better today is Whitney Powell is joining us. And she is not only an athlete, a triathlete, a sponsored triathlete and runner, but a filmmaker, a model, a passion coach, and we got to get into that, Whitney, a passion coach. I want to know a little about that. A world traveler, and she's worked with elite athletes all over the world. In fact, she has her own podcast or part of it, Women in Sports, WISP, and starting a new podcast with Jimmy Dean, and we'll get into some of that too.
Where would I find WISP?
Whitney Powell, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, sorry. Whitney, where would I find WISP? Can I just type in WISP in my iTunes browser?
Yeah, you can actually type it in there, or if you go online to WISP Media, it'll pop right up, and you can click on the podcasts, and it'll take you right to the episodes.
What's it about? Women in sports?
It's really about women in sports who are just crushing it. Mm. Women tend to get a lot less media than men, just in general, so we decided to highlight women's sports and try to encourage younger women to actually get involved and have a little bit more access to some of these upper echelon athletes. So it's been a really, really good way to encourage the younger women and kind of share the news and the happenings in elite and Olympic sports, especially as we come into an Olympic year.
So what kind of sports do you focus on? Is it mostly endurance type sports, or what kind of things do you look at?
You know, this one is really everything. And I got to be honest, a lot of them I don't know anything about. We cover skiing, sailing, equestrian, a lot of rowing.
You interview horses?
Equestrian. Women,
yes.
Horses.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fillies.
They're usually really short, yeah. Though. Yeah. They're usually pretty short. They don't talk back much. So.
Not like Mr. Ed, which was very talkative for a horse. Well,
if sure. I was to jump on there and have a sample, which has been your favorite podcast that you've done?
I would say the one we did with an Olympic hopeful rower named Sarah. I'm trying to remember her last name. I didn't actually know her before the podcast, but it's right up there at the front. We just did it, and she's just really, really incredible. She's kind of an underdog in rowing, and she's just really, really crushing it right now. So I'm really excited to see how she does in Rio.
What are some of the things that you find when you interview these elite athletes that are common traits or personalities that you just say, you know what, that's a common ingredient. Regardless of the sport, you need that if you want to be one of those.
I would say creating good habits. They really try to create good habits, getting up in the morning and, you know, whether or not it's too cold, too dark, they're too tired, they get up and they do the work. And that seems to be pretty consistent across the board. So that, and I think the fear a failure is not really there. Yeah. And that's kind of one thing that I work with athletes and work with people in film as well, is just kind of forgetting about that fear of failure and just kind of going big. I mean, really, really not being afraid to try and to work really hard. So,
let's get into this passion, coach.
That was a natural place to go next. You're right.
I'm very interested in what that is.
Yeah.
And how can I get involved?
So, wouldn't you like to know? I'm just kidding. Totally kidding.
Can I hit pause here for a second and see where this passion thing's going before we get committed?
Put your finger on the buzzer, Freeman.
Do I
on
have
the
a
dump
buzzer?
Button.
Do we have a buzzer?
We have a dump button, don't you?
So what is Go a ahead. Passion coach, and how long did it take you to qualify for this credential?
It's taken a lifetime.
Good.
So basically what it is getting sort of pooling people's resources, passions, strengths, skills, and kind of connecting the dots and bringing them together to have their brand represent that. So, for example, it could be a professional or Olympic athlete that is looking for a sponsor, but they have no idea how to approach the sponsor, what sponsor is a good fit, why the sponsor would even want to work with them. So I kind of help them figure out what media will kind of help them get that sponsor. And then figure out really what it is that sells them, like what makes them stand out. So we kind of put the passion into the brand, and it could be something as small as putting their favorite color into their logo. And it could be something like making them larger than life and making them seem so irresistibly interesting and fascinating, even if they don't think that they have anything interesting to offer. So if they're really, really shy, then I can still dig deep and kind of find out what they're really good at and sell it and make it big. So that's kind of where I help the athletes.
That's interesting, because just because you're an elite athlete and you have an incredible VO2 max doesn't always mean that you have the savvy to go around and find a way to get sponsored or appeal to a group or to show that side of you. You're so busy hammered on the track or hammering out in the pool, you don't necessarily have that skill set. So it's good to have a place to turn and say, I can train and I can get on the podium, but I can't get on the Wheaties box.
It's really true. And a lot of times they do have sponsors that do come to them, but they're not a good fit. Mm-hmm. So I kind of try to help them sell themselves in a way that's true to them so they can find those sponsors that are the right fit.
So let me ask you this. It's not, well, I don't want to tell you the answer as I'm saying, so let me ask it a different way. Is it necessary to be the fastest and the swiftest athlete to get some sponsorship?
Absolutely not. And I can say that from personal experience. I actually just got some sponsors from, Lululemon, from JL Velo. Like, I have some big companies that sponsor me, and I am not on the podium, I can tell you. I mean, I'm okay. I'm not tragic, but
you don't have.
So you're telling me I don't have a chance?
Because you are tragic.
Because I'm tragic.
Anybody above tragic should call Whitney. She can help you.
Yeah, if you feel like you're tragic, call me, because I promise you're not. There is something about you that we can sell. And we can match you up with a sponsor, or, we can help you.
So we have a nation of listeners that are listening to this right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that there are a large percentage that are going, I need that.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do they get that from you? Where can they find you?
Well, they can definitely go to my website. It's www.ironwillproductions.com. And I'm really easy to find there. So if you contact me, I'll get in touch with you right away. I'm a real person, so I actually care. I'll contact you. You're not just going on an email list. I'm also really active on Instagram and Facebook. So for Instagram, it's at IronWillWit, WHIT. So I'm really easy to contact there. All my information is up, and I'm actually in the middle of getting a few packages together specifically for these athletes to kind of help them with the sponsorship issue. This really seems to be such a common issue that I was like, well, I really need to put something together specifically for those athletes. So I have a lot more coming in the next month
or
so.
It helps both sides too. It helps manufacturers and vendors, because people are influential, whether they're on the podium or just a good ambassador out on the trail or wherever the sport is. There are people that are influential, just not podium people.
Exactly. And a lot of companies really look for that. And people don't really realize that they think like, oh, I need to be, you know, Lance Armstrong or, you know, I don't know, some Olympic athlete to get some huge sponsor. But sometimes they actually want people that are out in the community that are just really active, or that are good networkers, or people that have different skills. So that's kind of where I help people find those skills and match them up the best that
we can. What's the difference between a full-on sponsored athlete and an ambassador?
A full-on sponsored athlete, and it's kind of different depending on the company as well. So there are kind of different definitions, but I'm going to say very, very generally, an ambassador is not going to be paid. They'll either be given free product, or they'll be asked to post a few pictures, you know, on Instagram, or, you know, talk about their product or write a review about it. A sponsor could be either part of a race team. They could be paid. That is hard to find. I will say that. So paid sponsorships are kind of hard to find sometimes. But that's kind of the biggest difference. It really depends on the company.
So if a person is looking that direction, how can they best prepare? And, you know, starting getting a following or an Instagram, a number of, you know, people behind them, how do you create the groundwork to become someone that might be interesting to a manufacturer?
Yeah, this is really interesting. This is where a lot of people make mistakes. The most important thing is to do what you do and to just be interesting, you know, do what you're passionate about. It's a little bit difficult to sometimes build email lists and be on 20 different social media platforms. And it's hard to do that, and it's hard to manage it, and it's a ton of work. It's a full-time job. So if you do things like travel and race and, you know, work for charities and just do what you do and put that up on whatever social media you can manage at the time. So if you can't manage a YouTube channel, don't do that. Don't even start it. Work a little bit on Facebook, post things on Facebook and tag people in it. So you kind of start building a connection or kind of hinting at that company that you like them or use their products, or so it really comes down to just making yourself as interesting as possible.
You know, the one thing that I've noticed is, well, first of all, the word passion is part of passion coach, which means you have to be passionate about what you're doing. The second thing that I've noticed, the people that I really like to follow and look at and that have large followings are those that are authentic. They're not portraying something that they're not. They're just, they portray and ooze that passion that they have, and they're very authentic. Mm-hmm. That's what I look for.
You even watch some, what is it? It's got some alcohol stove podcast. I mean.
We don't need to get into my secret passion there, okay. Don Freeman.
Well, you know.
I'm into backpacking, and I love ultralight stuff. And there's YouTube channels about alcohol stoves that I watch too many of.
Whitney, do you think it's a problem if one person has like 12 alcohol stoves? I mean, how many do you
They're
need?
They're all different, Freeman.
Well, if they all serve a purpose, I suppose, you know, without trying it, I can't really discriminate or judge. So
what you're saying is don't step on another man's passion? All right.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah. If that's what makes him, then let him be.
Yeah, come on, Freeman.
Let him do it.
Give me a break.
All right. So this is a grab bag, drop bag, not an audio. Is it an audio magazine?
No, this is not an audio magazine.
All right.
This is just a drop bag.
Old style.
However.
Which is really an audio magazine without the title.
Right. Okay. Or the magazine cover.
Right.
And Don Freeman likes to throw kinks in the system. Mm-hmm. And so
although Whitney and I prepared for the drop bag, which is the rules of the drop bag. Would you like to?
You have to come to the table with at least three topics, and you keep the topics undercover. We don't tell one another, and we just launch them out on the podcast. We give our opinion. If you launch a topic, you give your opinion, and you talk a little bit about it, and then it's up for discussion. And it's fun, it's organic, and it's just good conversation about topics that you might be interested in.
Yeah. Now Whitney, what Don did not tell you when he was prepping you for this is he had no topics in his head. He had nothing. Yep. I was telling him I had a few good ones. I have a few bad ones.
Perfect.
But he had nothing. And so he was creative enough that he said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to pull out the dictionary, mm-hmm. and we'll talk about that in a minute.
When in doubt... Don't fall back on the alcohol source.
Yeah, exactly. But so he decided, I'm going to get a dictionary, and I'm going to open up a page in the dictionary, and then he will hand the dictionary to me, and I get to pick one of the words, and he has to relate that to trail running. So a little bit different.
Interesting.
But here's the fun part, is he calls me because he was at work, and he says, hey, do you have a dictionary you can bring? And I go, I don't carry a dictionary around with me. So somehow he was able to find a dictionary.
Let's just say I called my mother.
And I don't know if you can see this, Whitney, in your camera, but this says a dictionary for boys and girls. The pages are brown,
yes,
because of age. And if you open it up, it says Webster's Elementary Dictionary. It's a Merriam-Webster, a dictionary for boys and girls. And on the inside cover, the copyright is 1941. So it's
vintage.
It's
good
up
year.
To date. An up to date.
They didn't even know the outcome of World War II when this was put together.
And it's actually kind of funny. I was reading it behind the preface. It actually has in here rules for spelling, certain classes of words when endings are added. And it talks about plurals. Anyway, it's kind of a cool little dictionary. So we're gonna have some fun with that, I think.
Yeah. So that's my topic. I just, with all the chaos that's gone on, I didn't have time to get topics that were relevant or meaningful. So I'm taking a risk here, but I'm really counting on you guys to help pull it through, because I can get to the page, and I think Scott can get to a word, and I think the rest of us could make a conversation. So who's gonna start off?
Well,
with this
it's ladies first.
Ladies first.
Okay, I would like to start with the funniest or the weirdest thing that you have seen during a race or run.
Mm. Hmm. What's the funniest thing you've seen, Whitney, since you brought the topic up? What's the funniest thing you've
seen? Give us some
seen.
Time to think about this.
I think the funniest one for me was I was actually running a marathon, and within probably 0.2 miles, I was passed by a Toucan Sam and a pantsless banana.
Oh, pantsless.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought I'd seen it all. And no, I had not. The Toucan Sam even had cereal too. I mean, blew by me. Like, these guys were at the finish line probably hours before me. It was embarrassing.
I wonder if there was any chafage in the costumes.
You know, I would have thought they did not look comfortable. I mean, the guy's head was in a little like hole in the banana. Like, he had no pants, just running shoes and a banana suit.
Oh,
I don't know.
My.
It was it was weird.
Well, what was the temperature out there?
I don't really remember. I mean, not that cold. It's Southern California.
Yeah. Well, it probably didn't even capture any attention down there.
Yeah, I know. Probably
Where
not.
Where do you put your bib? Probably. What do you tag that thing on?
Oh, good question. I don't know. I wasn't looking.
sure.
What's yours?
You're throwing
Freeman?
It over to me.
Yeah.
Do you have one? Is that
you know,
stalling?
Mine's not a great answer, but it is an answer.
Well, I don't have an answer, so let's hear yours.
So mine came when I first started trail running, and since then I've seen this on occasion, and it hasn't surprised or been too bad of. It's just something you get used to if you've been out on the trails very, mm-hmm. very long. But there was one time we were running down from Cool, which is up in Auburn, part of the Western States course, and we're coming around pretty
pretty quick, and it was kind of a nice downhill run. And we came around a corner, and there, just off the side of a trail, was a very nice-looking young lady with her pants,
oh, no.
her pants down around her knees in a squatted position, showing the full moon. And I wasn't expecting that, and it was quite startling to me. So I'm I've seen it many times since, and it wasn't as startling, but I just couldn't comprehend that at that time.
Well, so. Scott, you've kind of railroaded my thought process.
I stopped and talked to her.
That's a bit awkward, isn't it?
That was surprising
starter?
For her.
Oh, jeez. Poor thing.
Well, I'm going to kind of just piggyback on that and kind of along the same thing, but theme, but not squatting at all, but a female just standing, shorts pulled to the side, and, you know, standing up like a gentleman and getting it done. And that was a bit of a surprise.
You know, along the same line, I remember my first 50-miler, there was a lady that had some problems.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not pretty.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say.
You know, and so
that was funny. To me, I had to snicker.
I was talking to a runner that, and it was on a long race, and your legs are gone, and they were leaning against a tree, you know, getting, you know, there's one or two, right? So we're talking two. And legs failed down the side of the tree, landing straight, sitting in the pile. And I didn't see it, just heard the story, and that's as far as I'm going with that. So I blame all of this content on Whitney. She brought up the first topic.
She took us to the gutter right out of the gate.
Well, you know, we start with the passion coach. Yeah. We go to the gutter, you know. Someone's got to keep this interesting here. I'm just kidding.
Scott?
Okay, so here's my topic, and because I was not sure of the rules, because we change the rules so often, I have a title.
Oh, good. Well, then.
And so what I'm going to do here, Whitney, is I'm going to say the title, and then you guys have to guess what the topic is. And this one's actually a pretty easy one, so I'm throwing a softball here.
Okay, you first, Whitney.
This is my title: Run Fast or Fast Run.
Oh. So just totally guess the topic, right? Okay. I think running smart, like not just going out and hammering it all the time, but running with a plan, running smartly.
That's a very good answer, but incorrect.
Okay. Then I'm going.
So much for the softball.
You can swing hard at softballs. And I'm going to say it is about consistency of getting it
done. That's also a very good
Thank
guess, but wrong.
Oh.
Oh.
Okay, so this is where I was going.
We might call you wrong. Go ahead. That's a wrong title.
My topic is centered around doing a fasted run.
Oh, that kind of fast.
You know, we've talked about becoming fat adapted.
Right.
And how
my favorite topic.
And how
it
important.
Is?
See, you'll have some good stuff to say. See, I was.
You're
setting
her
up. The softball.
Oh.
She swung and she missed, but the second pitch she's going to hit out of the park. We've talked about fasted running, and we've talked to a number of different athletes on the podcast about how they do fasted running. In fact, one of our last recent podcasts was with Sage Cannaday, who is a high-carb dieted runner.
Mm-hmm.
But he talks about doing fasted runs. And so my question is, fasted runs – thumbs up, thumbs down, and then let's get into more of the detail. How often? How long do you fast before you go run? Is it multi-day? Is it just overnight?
Mm-hmm.
And what benefits come from a fasted run?
All right.
Discuss.
Oh, you're just throwing it up there.
Well, Whitney, ladies first, she said she has a lot to talk about. Whitney,
good.
Tell us what you know about fasted runs or rides.
Or your experience.
Or swims.
Or your experience.
Sure. Well, I actually do this for Ironman. So I am definitely practiced in the fasted run and I am a firm believer in it. I have found that as an athlete, I've gotten really, really good results from it. And you do have to start pretty early. So it's definitely not something that somebody could jump into, you know, a few weeks before a race or, you know, it does take a while to do it, but I'm definitely a firm believer in it. And I only do it overnight. So I'll stop eating. I try to work out afterwards. So I deplete any glycogen that I have left and then sleep overnight, wake up in the morning and usually do an easier workout in the morning. So I'm not actually having to do anything with some really high intensity, and then eat breakfast again, eat a pretty light lunch, and then a little bit of dinner. All of this is low carb. So I'm actually a low carb athlete as well. Mm-hmm. And then repeat the cycle. So I don't usually do it like for days or anything, but I do eat pretty low carb, just all the time. And I have found that to be really effective.
How often do you throw in a fasted run? Once a week, once a month?
Every day? Almost once a day.
Oh, every day.
Yeah.
Okay. So your morning workout or your morning run is in a fasted state. So you don't eat until you get back.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm on the same team with that. I make sure that, you know, I never eat when I'm asleep. I've never found myself with a sandwich. Like, how did this get here? So
the strange thing is I have. I wake up and I have a Subway on my stomach.
You don't even know how I got there. And so all of our morning runs, Scott, have been exactly in that state. And then after we talked with Tim Noakes about the water, I didn't.
Waterlogged.
Heck, I'm not going to go out there and run 8 miles in the morning and carry a hydration pack and two water bottles. And not necessary. So I'm really rolling out and putting on the shorts and lacing up the shoes and getting out there and doing it. And I think that has helped with the becoming fat adapted and teaching the body to draw from its own resources and not relying on what we just piled in.
You know, I think for me, in my evolution of running, where when I first started running, I would take a goo as soon as I woke up and headed out the door mm-hmm. for my run. And mentally, I thought I needed that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now there's some empowerment that comes when you go out on a fasted run where you think, I haven't eaten anything since 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock the previous evening. I didn't down a 16-ounce bottle of water before I started my run. I'm starting out in a depleted state, and to go out for, you know, a hour and a half run, it gives you some empowerment, some mental empowerment, I think, besides some of the physiological advantages.
I'm going to say delete that depleted state, because you're not depleted. You have plenty of resources on board. So I'm just going to say you weren't depleted. You were prepped and ready.
Yeah. You have a lot.
Yeah. A lot of that does seem to be mental training too. Right. You're so used to being in that routine of like getting up and having breakfast and, you know, having a big dinner with dessert or a drink or something afterwards. But when you really start to kind of train yourself and then start to see the results after time, then I think it really starts to pay off.
I have a question for you, Whitney. Are you a coffee drinker?
Yes.
Okay. So,
I totally am.
So do you have your cup of Joe before you run? Is that okay? In your fasted state, do you still have your cup of Joe?
Yes.
Okay.
I do.
It's usually about
an hour before.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people doing that. I mean, Don and I are not coffee drinkers, so we don't have that experience. But I've heard that, you know, we were talking, this is probably years ago, to Mark Lance.
Yeah.
And Eric Skaden.
Uh-huh.
And they said that that's what they would do. They'd go out in a fasted state, and they'd both drink a cup of coffee before they'd go out for a 30-mile run.
You know who else talked about that? Oh. But not 30 miles. It was Mark Cucuzzella and the Sock Doc.
Yeah.
About prepping and getting things going. That caffeine has the ability, as I recall, the ability to bring some of the fat and start the fat burning process. It's conducive to that.
So I just have a chocolate bar.
Yeah, because there's caffeine in there.
And there's some fat.
All right. You know, I haven't been nervous for a while, Scott, on a podcast.
This is going to be really fun.
A little bit nervous.
I've already looked at some of the words, and one page I opened to, there about like 90% of the words, I didn't even know what they were.
These are old words. You weren't around in 1941, so you're not expected to know all these words. Let me hand over the book to you.
Oh, okay. So I get to choose the word, right?
Yep. What letter? What letter? I should have looked at that.
We are in the P's.
All right. I know quite a few P words.
Okay, this is the word. And Whitney, you get to chime in and let us know if you know what this word means.
You've got to give me words I know, Scott.
Okay, the word is the word is prink. P-R-I-N-K, prink. crank.
Definition is it's a verb to dress up, to dress oneself for show, as prinking for the party.
Oh, come on, Scott.
Prinking.
This isn't exactly.
Sounds like a slang word from like back in the day.
This is before they went down to the dance hall. They prinked themselves up before they went to the dance hall.
All right, prink. As it relates to trail running, right?
Yep.
Read the definition one more time for me.
I just closed the book.
To dress or to prep.
Yeah, something
so
like that.
So I'm going to say that
to dress up, to dress oneself for show.
Okay. So how much? Yeah, you see where I'm going, right, Whitney? So how much of the gear that people are using are to look the part, and ooh, how many people are using it for function?
Nice one, Freeman.
You know, I'm working this. And so, compression socks, functional or fashion? Mm. Which one? How about arm sleeves? And so there's a bunch of stuff. You put the watch on, you're wearing the best GPS. Are you using all the function, or you just, kind of want to be seen with the right garment?
So can I ask a question, roundtable question on that?
Sure, because there's no rules to how long I have to talk when I'm on the dictionary guest.
What is the one thing that you wear for fashion, not function, when you go out on the trail?
My contacts.
That's function.
Oh, function. Fashion, function. Okay. What do I wear for fashion? I'm pretty much a very functional person. I don't like to carry extra stuff, but I'll just probably say a hat. In a lot of cases, that hat really doesn't do a lot for me. There's not sun coming down. There's not rain coming down.
In the morning, you mean?
Yeah. Hair's kind of whacked probably because, I'm rolling out fasted and I'm not going to, prep up. So probably just throwing on a hat is more of just so I don't insult anybody with my mop.
How about you, Whitney?
I'm going to have She's to a say model, my by banana the way. Suit she, so I run fast.
You have a banana suit?
No, I don't have a banana suit.
That banana suit's missing its pants from what I recall earlier.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, it's not functional. That's a fashion choice. So
it could be aerodynamic, Whitney.
Yeah, it could be.
It could. That's true. I haven't tried it on the bike yet, but.
So what is your all fashion, no function piece of gear?
I'm kind of with you. I kind of wear the bare minimum. I would just say that I choose what pieces I wear, so I look at least coordinated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're a coordinated runner?
I try to be. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I try to be. Get the pink glasses with the pink shorts. I race in pink and black, so I kind of coordinate everything there. Make sure my,
It's hard. Once you start coordinating, then you're a slave to coordination.
You are?
It's true.
I don't know. I think, Scott, it's a podcast.
I think he's
on
to something.
There are times, I hate to admit this, and this is going to sound a little bit hinky, but...
Should I hit pause?
Or you no, just let it roll.
Okay.
People won't listen this far into the podcast anyway.
Whitney's on, they will.
There are times where Don and I have gone out for...
Wait, don't include me in your stories when you're...
An early morning run,
yeah?
And he hops in the truck.
Yeah.
And he's wearing the exact same shorts, the exact same shirt, the exact same buff. And we look like twins.
Yeah, it's embarrassing.
It's very embarrassing. I'm glad that nobody ever...
Now you know how women feel.
It's too dark in the morning that people don't see us together, but...
But in cycling...
Well, yeah.
In cycling, that's team wear in cycling, right? You see a group of five people in a pace line, and they're all in the same gear. You're like, wow, that looks good.
Yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, with Ironman, we're not allowed to ride with anybody, so you really actually benefit from standing out a little bit, so... I dress pretty flashy on the course.
So why is it okay in cycling, and we're not talking about the Ironman, but some of this stuff where you can have a pace line, it's totally okay to match. But if we matched as runners, I think people would probably frown a little bit on a regular workout, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a little weird because maybe because it's a little bit more of an individual sport. Like you're not necessarily trail running as a team.
Yeah, yeah.
So
and that's. Just, I guess.
We've talked about this before. I know that Don has talked about it many times, where if you're running down the trail, you can pick the person running at you, whether they're a real trail runner or not, by the kit they're wearing. So my question is it okay to break out of the trail running norm and just wear whatever
feels comfortable.
Well, I think that is the trail running norm. Just wearing whatever works.
Well, I
just you wear a banana suit if you want. You wear whatever you want.
I remember
just own it.
the very first 50K that I ran, it was in the last probably last 10 miles. The gentleman, I was exchanging leads with a gentleman, and he was probably...
No, position.
Position, sorry, yeah, not the lead. Right. I was not in the lead. Thank you for the clarification.
I didn't mean to pull you back down into the pot like all the crabs. I don't mean to pull you back down with me.
No, but you're being realistic. But this guy was a larger gentleman, mm-hmm. and he's wearing knee-length cargo shorts with pockets on the side and a flannel shirt.
Are you sure he had a bib on, Scott? Maybe he was out hiking.
No, he had a bib, and he had a water bottle. But I just remember I was thinking, here I am looking the part because I have, you know, the short shorts, and I have my sweat wicking or moisture wicking shirt, and I have cool shoes that I bought at the local running store. And this guy, I think he was wearing hiking boots. And I was thinking, you know what? This guy's kicking my butt. In fact, I think he beat me.
Well, we started working on speed work after that, Whitney. Go ahead. She's.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that's actually interesting you say that because I have actually seen the same thing both in triathlon and running. And I've also seen it go the other way where you see the person on the $10,000 bike or the amazing, you know, they have amazing hydration packs or the most expensive shoes, but they're really, really slow. So how do you really judge a person based on just what they look like? You know, I don't know if it can be just gear alone.
The word is prinking.
And Scott, what do you wear that's completely
fashionable?
You sidestepped. What do you have?
You know, I would have to say my compression socks.
Yeah. All right.
You know, I haven't yet felt that they really do anything for me other than keep my lower leg clean in a muddy day.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that's probably the one thing that I it's probably not a functional thing.
To prink, P-R-I-N-K, to prink.
To prink.
New word. Okay.
Okay, Whitney, you're up.
Okay. Let's talk about some of your pet peeves that people talk to you about running. So, for example, somebody says to you, isn't running bad for your knees?
It's pet peeves about running. So that's a good one. Do you have any more you want to submit, or you want us to start to throw a few things out?
Oh, well, there's a whole bunch of them. I mean, isn't running bad for your knees one of them? So no is the answer if you take care of them. So, I mean, there's a whole bunch. So I wanted to hear what you guys had to say.
Yeah, you know, you walk into an orthopedist office and you don't see a bunch of runners there. That's not the people getting knees replaced. It's the people that have been surfing on that couch. All of a sudden, they stand up with their overweight body and they twist to go get another soda and bag of chips and they tear their meniscus.
You know, along the same lines, it kind of is a pet peeve, and it could be justified, but inevitably when someone says, oh, I'd love to go run, but I have a bad knee.
My doctor told me not to run.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I mean, I've had both my ACLs replaced and my knees, and I have no problem out on the trail. And maybe I'm just being judgmental. Maybe they do have bad knees, and maybe it does hurt them. But I think that running's good for your joints.
Yeah, if you have proper gait and you're doing things right.
Yeah,
I think it is good to stay active, to keep bone density and cartilage and tendons strong. You've got to use them. That's what they're built for.
Yeah, and people do have problems, but it's because they're not doing the other work to.
Right.
Maintain, you know, the muscle mass or, you know, just like you guys said. So, yep. You know, it's not the running. It's that they're not putting in the other work. So, or taking care of themselves at all.
A pet peeve about running. Ask that question again to help redirect me.
Well, more of a pet peeve that people, maybe a misconception about running that people talk to you about.
Mine that I always have, that I always get at, the question is, so on these long races, you're running the entire time?
Oh my God, I've heard that. Yes.
And I inevitably have to say, well, no, because there's very steep hills. You can't, unless you're on the front of the podium type finisher, a lot of those hills you're not running, and you have to stop at the aid station and stop to, like this lady that I met earlier in the podcast that had to
use the restroom. Okay, so now here's one a common misconception that I have about running, and people think back about running. They recall when they've run last, and it was probably hot, or they were trying to carry a bag, or maybe they just had to go
carry a bag.
I don't know. Maybe they're running with a bag. And
is it Santa Claus? What are you talking about?
Let me, Scott. I'm building the foundation for my comment.
I'm trying to visualize the picture you're painting, and I see Santa Claus running down the trail.
Strike that vision.
Okay.
And people think that running is hard, and it shouldn't be hard. And if you're going to do something for 30, 60, 100 miles, it better not be hard at that level. That running should be an efficient way to travel. And that's what running is for me about, and that's why I love endurance running, is because it isn't a mad dash from one end of the track to the other. And it's not that experience that you may recall the last time you've run of what it felt like, that if you get yourself in shape and you work on gait and you really just get into the sport, it's a pleasure to be out there.
And it may be one of the most natural things you do.
I remember when it finally came together, and I felt like I was just riding a horse. I just felt like I was watching it all happen. And it wasn't hard at that moment to run down the trail. It was just unfolding, and it was comfortable. I wasn't breathing hard. I wasn't working hard, yet I was still moving. And when that moment happened, it was like if you were a golfer and you hit the ball straight and it felt right, or whatever sport you're in, that's happened to me on that day when running just went boom. This is cool.
I am looking forward to that day.
No, you've had it. You still want it. Anybody listening to this has been there, or on their way there. That's the fun part. So, yeah, I think that's a common misconception that it isn't hard, that it should be reasonably comfortable.
So does it bother you, too, when someone said, when you say, that you've run 50 miles or you run 100 miles, and they go, I don't even like to drive that far.
What are they going to say? That's teed up.
It kind of bugs me.
Spin on your heel and walk away from them? What do you do, Scott?
Spit on them.
That's not nice.
No, I don't.
You're not going to have friends.
I usually say that, no, I don't like to drive that far either, so I run.
Yeah.
Oh,
no, that's a good comeback. Comment. I need to write that one down.
Yeah, that's good. I don't like to drive 100 miles either.
Yeah. All right. It sucks, especially in L.A., we've got traffic here. No, ain't nobody got time for that.
Nobody got time for that. I was down there. It was 20 miles to the place we were supposed to go, and there was plenty of time to get there. And he goes, oh, we can't go there. They'll be closed. I said, we have an hour and a half. And he goes, we'll never make it. I went back. All right. Well, Scott?
Okay, here's my title.
All right. We have to guess the topic.
And this one could be a stretch because last one was a softball.
Oh, geez.
Boom. Let me start over. Boom shakalaka.
I'll take the hit on this one, Whitney, to give you time to talk. Boom. Boom shakalaka. I'm going to say it's about people that are wearing earbuds in both ears and not letting you get around them when you need to. And I think that is where you're going with this trail etiquette.
That is a very good guess. Mm-hmm. And very close to the real answer.
Ooh, Whitney.
But still missed the mark.
So what we
if
have
you were
is
an archer, you hit the target, you didn't hit the center.
So to you, Whitney, ooh, it's about now redefining and working with what you have, which is a little bit about trail etiquette and headphones, and that's kind of the thread. Where can you take us?
Boom shakalaka.
Oh, geez, guys. That's one I have not heard before. I got to be honest, like on the trail.
What's the song?
Is it when somebody,
what's that
somebody
song that
won't get out of your way?
No. Let me define. First, I got to think of what song that's from. And in fact, when we figure it out, you need to put this on the podcast
for the ending. Okay.
Yeah.
It's 90s hip hop, isn't it?
No.
I can like hear the song.
Boom. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
So here's the topic. You guys got too philosophical. It's actually a lot simpler than that. It's basically, if you listen to music, what's on your playlist?
Oh, all right.
It's that simple. So Whitney, being a first timer on TRN, what's on your playlist, Whitney?
Honestly, I put a huge variety on my playlist. So I try to mix it up so I actually stay interested, because a lot of times I can't actually race with music. So if I'm doing a long run, I kind of need it to keep my attention. So I'm going to say epic movie soundtracks, like songs from epic movies.
Give us an example of, give us an example of an movie, a movie.
A movie.
She's a film.
What's your favorite soundtrack?
Yeah. You know what? I have so many. You know what a really, really good one is How to Train Your Dragon. I know you're going to laugh. It has really, really good music.
I'm going to have to look that one up on my Spotify account. How to Train Your Dragon. I'm looking it up already.
Yeah. Guardians of the Galaxy is good. Avengers is good. There's a bunch of good ones. So, and it's a lot of the same composers. So, you know.
These are movies you're talking about?
These are
Don
movies.
Doesn't, Don, yeah. Don hasn't seen a movie since Jaws in 1972.
that's good too. I mix that in with some rock and some catchy pop.
If your friends, your closest friends, got a hold of your playlist, what would they be the most surprised with?
Probably a One Direction song. I can't believe I even said that. I have no Justin Bieber. I have no Bieber, but I do have two One Direction songs.
I don't think there's any self-respecting trail runner that has Justin Bieber on the playlist.
Thank you.
You can never listen to One Direction on an out and back.
No.
Oh my gosh! I'm gonna slap my knee and I'm gonna chortle in laughter.
Sorry.
Nice one.
Thanks. All right, Scott, Freeman, what's on your
what? No, what's on yours?
Oh, I've got a little bit of everything. You know, I've got you hear at the end of the podcast, some Native American drums.
Uh-huh.
And it it's kind of cool to kind of get into the rhythm and the beat. And we've talked to Phil Maffetone about rhythm. And I think the world works on a rhythm. And I kind of want to be part of the trail rhythm and what's happening in that environment, because there is a symphony out there. Real soundtrack, if you will, Whitney Powell.
My playlist has a lot of Linkin Park in it. And Don knows this, my guilty pleasure, running. It's the only time I can listen to this music. You know what it is, right?
I'm going to tell the story, okay? Because if all of a sudden I see Scott ahead of me and I'm trying to catch him, I know that the Dixie Chicks are on.
The Dixie Chicks.
That guy, if Dixie Chicks, he turns from that guy that's trying to chase the gentleman in hiking boots to a podium finisher when the Dixie Chicks roll.
To a banana suit?
A banana suit.
Oh, I don't like country music at all. I don't own any country music, but I do have a couple albums from Dixie Chicks, and for some reason it motivates me when I'm running.
They haven't even made any music since like the 90s.
And it's questionable whether that was music.
I'm an old guy, Whitney.
Thank you. I'm with you.
old? And by the way, I'm going to have to buy How to Train Your Dragon because it's not on Spotify.
Oh.
Dang it.
All right.
It's pretty good music.
The letter is H.
H. And I get to pick a...
Any word you want there. So, Whitney, you're starting a podcast. He's looking for that. You're starting a podcast with Jimmy Dean Freeman. Now, how did that happen? And maybe I just better leave it at that. tell us about that.
Well, Jimmy randomly told me happy birthday on my last birthday because I was turning 30. And we were already friends on Facebook and had some mutual friends and stuff, but I didn't really know him that well. And very long story short, we kind of started chatting and talked about some things that we really wanted to do. And it turns out that both of us really wanted to start a podcast. So we started talking about what kind of podcast, not giving away too much, but what kind of podcast, what are you into? who would you talk to? And it was basically the exact same thing. So Jimmy was like, okay, consider this done. You and I need to start a podcast together. We're doing it now. So we actually did our first test run yesterday. So we're pretty excited to launch. I think we're shooting for an April 1st launch. That's our goal.
That's so Jimmy. An April 1st.
April Fool's.
Yeah.
So
I know, right?
Will we hear the episode that you recorded here, or were you just kind of tuning up and getting ready?
Yeah, it was basically just a sound check and everything, so that's not an actual episode. So our first one should be pretty cool, though. We have some pretty exciting guests lined up.
What kind of topics, what kind of genre are we talking about?
Can I use expletives on this show?
Yeah, if you say them with a straight face. Yeah.
Okay, it's called the Do Inspiring Shit Podcast.
Well, that,
yeah,
that sounds good. So that kind of leaves the door wide open. It could be anything. Is it athlete stuff or professional or personal stuff?
You know, it's really by and for anybody that is kind of a doer, a motivator, an influencer, somebody who's doing really awesome stuff and how they're doing them. So we really want to inspire other people who are doing something cool. Whether or not they're a pro athlete or an executive somewhere, they could just be climbing all seven peaks, you know, in the world, or starting up a coffee company, or just doing something really, really cool. So we talked to them about what inspired them to start, if they left their job, why did they quit their day job to do this? Like, why are they so passionate about this? And how can somebody else learn something from that and get excited about their own passions?
Bingo, you hit that. Is going to be a fun podcast, and I would listen to that because who doesn't want to hear inspiring stories that help motivate you to be something better in your own life? I like it.
Right. And we're hoping to actually teach people like actionable steps to doing some of these things too. So not, you know, the motivational posters are, you know, done. Like, you can only hear so many inspiring stories and motivational stories and stuff. But if you don't know how to actually do these things or to take these steps, then it's kind of useless information. So we really want to inspire people and then give people steps to doing things. So
very cool. I like it. God, yeah. Have you come up with an H word?
I have come up with an H word. It is a well-known word.
Okay.
And the word, you know, the funny thing in this dictionary is it doesn't have the origin of the words.
Well,
because I'd be interested in what the origin of this word is.
Scott, back when that was written, there was only one place, really. So we didn't have to think it came from somewhere else.
Old English. So this one is haphazard.
Oh,
haphazard.
Haphazard.
It's a noun, chance or accident, as events which occurred at haphazard. It's also an adjective, accidental chance, as some haphazard remark. Could be used as an adverb also.
All right.
So the word is haphazard. Freeman?
Yep. Okay. Says it relates to the trail. So often, the things that we stumble across.
By the way, I'm just having a joy watching your mind work right now. Because he still doesn't have any idea where he's going. It's how slow. Whitney, this is how it sets it up. He talks slower when he has no idea what he's going to say.
Go ahead.
Yeah, he should listen to the Dixie Chicks. Speed things up a little bit.
So haphazard. So often the things that we learn on the trail and that we come across that become golden nuggets were really just haphazard circumstances. Things that we otherwise, if we hadn't been in that situation, we never would have learned it. Because we are problem solvers, we are looking for solution, and we're out there in the extreme conditions, and boom, you found an answer. You found, I needed to drop my heart rate. I needed to make sure I had some sodium. I needed to make sure that I bring a shell just in case we have inclement weather so that I have this necessity to complete this run. So circumstances build our experiences, which build our ability to improve at what we love. I embrace haphazard circumstances.
That was good.
Oh, well, yeah.
You know, as you're talking about that, I think about a post that you and I both commented on recently. I think it was on Twitter. Although they're not called posts on Twitter. They're called tweets on Twitter. Mm-hmm. It's from Eric Strand. He's a longtime Nation member, and I don't know if you know anything about Eric Strand, Whitney, But he has run Hard Rock, I don't know how many times.
A number.
But he is famous for cutting the toes out of his shoes because he has an issue with black toenail. And so he'll cut the toe, the front of the shoe off so that he doesn't have that issue. And I think that was probably a haphazard adaptation to some pain that he had on a run.
Secondary to necessity. It's like my... If I'm either running barefooted or I'm cutting the front top of this shoe off. One of those two things are happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's an example for you, Whitney, of something that some circumstance that you got into that you learned something from?
I'm going to say maybe a training plan or lack thereof, like putting workouts together kind of haphazardly and having them not work out well, actually getting injured. So, I think kind of taking the time to put some sort of structure or plan together or just not going out too hard, too fast is a good way to avoid a bad situation or an injury.
How about you, Scott? What did
Maybe
you
that's
learn?
Bad.
That was good, Whitney. That was good, Whitney.
I talked about Eric Strand. It's your turn.
Oh, no. I've defined haphazard. So we're ready to move on to the final round.
Final round.
Final round of what's your topic? Or drop bag.
Go ahead, Whitney.
Okay, so this one's a little bit similar to the last one, but I'm going to say the things that people get annoyed with you as a very dedicated athlete. So what, you know, family, friends that are close to you, what annoys them most about you being a very dedicated athlete?
So what annoys your close family or friends? Let's start with you. You have to come clean first, Whitney, before we show you our dirty laundry.
I think it's that, and I swear my friends who are non-athletes actually say stuff like this. Well, you have to go do that whole exercise thing again. You have to go work out again. Yeah, this whole exercise thing. Like I'm some part of some athleisure community, you know, like.
Athleisure, that's
Iron
a good
Man.
Word.
Like,
I wonder if that's in the dictionary.
Not in the 1941 version.
Yeah, I'm not sure. So yeah, I think it's like I always have to go out for a run or a ride Saturday morning. Well, they want to go out Friday night, so I can't go. So that's kind of the sacrifice that I make, and that gets a little annoying to them sometimes. That's all.
Mine would be going out to dinner and eating something that people go, really? That's what you're going to eat?
Oh, my gosh. That's a good one. That's a really good one.
Yeah, that's and it probably annoys my wife sometimes because she'll make something that I'm polite enough to eat, but maybe I'm not eating as much as I normally would or maybe I pick things out of it. I'm a little more picky when I'm in heavy training. Right now, I'm trying to get my training back on track, and there's a lot of things that I don't eat. So I think that bothers my wife, and I think it bothers when we go out to dinner. We go to a nice steakhouse, and I get a chicken salad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, salad that's a chicken. Really good one. Yeah,
I have a box, a large box, a Rubbermaid big box full of shoes. And it spills over the top, but that's not where it stops. I have them hanging up. I've got a lot of shoes.
You have a lot of shoes hanging in your garage.
And I'm not departing with any of
them. Do you have the very first pair that you started running? They're probably Mizunos, right?
No, I don't have those. I don't. But the ones I have are very special. I do have Western States' first one. I'm not getting rid of those. And I bet you they have about 120 miles on them. They don't have a lot of miles on them. But each shoe is very important. I have shirts. I have other gear. I just can't get rid of some of that stuff because it's soldiered some of those tough days with me. And they're like a friend. I'm not getting rid of it.
So can you go to that bin and pull out shoes and remember specific, tangible memories with each of those friends?
Well, I think I can. And I'll tell you that.
Or you'd make him up.
I will make it up. But
we won't know the difference.
That's a great podcast, Freeman. We bring in the bin and we talk about the friends that you had in the bin, and what are the things you remember from that shoe?
So like a pair of Salomon shoes that I have, and they're orange and the white ones, and I look at them, and I've had some good runs in those, and they still got miles on them. What am I going to do? I'm not going to get rid of them. You know, and then I look at my Ultra that I have, and gosh. Go ahead, Whitney.
It's funny you say that. I'm actually going to run a couple marathons. I've been doing a lot of traveling and running marathons all over the world. Mm-hmm. And in June, I'm going to run the Big Five Trail Marathon in Johannesburg and then the Victoria Falls Marathon. And while we're there, we're going to a traditional Maasai celebration. And they will actually exchange running shoes for Maasai, like, handicrafts and stuff. So I have until June, but I swear I cannot decide what pair of shoes I have to give up in order to get this stuff. So I understand the shoe attachment.
Yeah, so it's tough. I would bring some another pair of shoes that I've never worn. I would take somebody else's shoes.
Go buy a pair of shoes just to give away.
Yeah.
Because there's no emotion attached.
Yeah, so I have some emotional attachment to my gear. I have headlamps, torches that are serviceable. I can't throw that stuff away. I have multiple pouches that go around. I've got
pouches,
stuff, whatever they're called. What are those things?
Fanny packs.
Well, I don't call them that.
you know, one of the things, Whitney, I have to share this with you, and I'm sure we've shared this with the nation, but there is nothing more enjoyable for me than to go out with Don Freeman when he has just put on and laced up a new pair of shoes. I just love it because
it's like a kid on Christmas morning.
The first 3 miles, he's just going, oh, this is the best shoe ever. I love this shoe.
If it
doesn't matter. He could be wearing a pair of
Vans. If it's a new shoe that I'm experimenting with and have never worn, I'll always have a strong opinion within 20 feet of the run.
And I don't think I've ever heard you have a negative opinion.
Always the best
shoe he's ever worn. Always the best shoe he's ever worn.
Yeah. All right, so you could be a passion coach too.
Yes, I can.
Yeah, let's talk about the shoes.
We've got to go. So that's my passion, Whitney. That would be fun if you could help define our passion.
We can sell it. Oh, we got this. No problem.
Scott?
For some reason, I'm having a little bit of deja vu. I think I may have brought this one up before, but I'm going to do it anyway because I didn't check it off my list. Just so you know, Freeman, I keep a list of drop bag topics on my electronic device here so that I can always be prepared for drop bag.
Well, I've got 368,000 words here, all right?
So here is the title. A picture is worth 1,000 words.
A picture.
A picture is worth 1,000 words. What's the topic, Freeman?
This topic is about photographers that are out on the course. And I think that's what it's about. I think it's a little about selling
Whitney?
Pictures.
No. Whitney? What do you think it's worth? And
well,
I'm actually let me give you a hint.
I didn't get a hint.
Once you know what the topic is, I'm very excited to hear what Whitney's answer to this topic is.
All right.
Oh, geez. Gosh, if that one's wrong, is it taking a mental picture versus actually taking a picture? Like taking in the trail that you're actually seeing versus like stopping to take a million iPhone photos? Is that kind of...
Visualization?
That is very, very close. Much closer than you were, Don.
I'm not surprised.
This is the topic. Again, you both overanalyzed. Here is the topic.
Yeah, we do that.
Where is the most beautiful trail that you've ever run? Where was it?
Oh.
So Whitney, I'm very excited to hear. You've done a lot of
world traveling.
Where is the most beautiful trail you have ever run?
Antarctica.
Really?
Yeah.
Tell us about it. Tell us
Antarctica?
About it.
Antarctica?
Yeah.
That surprises me.
I ran
Why was it
February.
And what was so beautiful about it? It's all snowy, right? Flat and snowy.
It's snowy. And it's not flat. It is not flat. It was actually the hardest run I've ever done in my life. It's the terrain isn't, I mean, there's nothing there but wilderness. Like it's all trail, obviously. You're climbing through snowbanks, you're going through mud, through small rocks, big rocks, a little bit of water, slush, literally climbing on your hands and knees, like through snowbanks. There's penguins on the trail, there's seals on the trail, there's icebergs out in the water. It's cool enough. It's just like a big snowy landscape with everything you would picture Antarctica to be. And it's just, it's so surreal being there. It's amazing. It's really amazing. But it was definitely the hardest run I've ever done. I actually did it in snow boots. So I opted to stay dry instead of wear normal running shoes. So I put my, my running shoe insoles in some slightly more comfortable snow boots and ran that way. So it was not comfortable, but it was by far the most beautiful.
Wow, that sounds good.
You know, I would. Do you have any pictures of you on the course?
Yeah.
Would you send me one, and we will use that as the podcast photo?
All right, that sounds cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Freeman, what's the most beautiful trail you've run?
Oh, you know, I'm gonna say that. How could I go wrong with saying the Grand Canyon? That was just so unique and so different. And every trail has its beauty. And last week I described. I described out Mount Tam and the Marin Headlands, and looking at Sausalito and the Golden Gate Bridge and the coast, the Pacific Ocean. But the Grand Canyon had you said surreal. It was like I was dropped down into another planet, because there's nothing like it. And there were deer that were just on the side of the trail, and they'd look right up at you, and you could almost reach out and touch them.
Those were bushes.
Well, they were in a bush.
You've been running for a while. You couldn't tell the difference anymore.
It was different and unique, and I really enjoyed it. So I would say that
it's really
beautiful
there.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful there. And you get the different colors of the rocks and the cliffs, and you can just see forever, and it's so beautiful there. That's a good pick. Mm-hmm.
That is a good pick. I need to get there.
Yep.
I've never seen the Grand Canyon.
We can do it this year, Scott. We can run it.
Yep. Okay, so mine is non-contested in my memory.
Okay.
The Hard Rock Course in the San Juan Mountains in Colorado.
Yep.
Every direction you turn, it's like you're in a painting. A fake painting. It's that beautiful.
Can I change mine?
No.
No.
It is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is amazing.
That's one you need to put on your bucket list, Whitney, because just to go out there and spectate. When Don and I went out there a few years ago just to spectate and watch runners, and that was the year that Killian Jornet won Hard Rock, and it was just, it's unbelievable. I grew up in the Rocky Mountains, and I was surprised that I had never been to the San Juan Mountains, because it's so beautiful.
Yeah,
and is that one of those moments where you,
go ahead.
Is that one of those moments where you get on that trail and you see that scenery, and even if you're in pain or you're tired, it's worth every second? Like it's that moment that you're just like, it's all worth it.
I think, and I'm just supposing, I would think that most of those runners, when they start feeling exhausted or they're hurting, I would think that that in their minds they're thinking, I'm pretty darn lucky to be on this course. It's pretty hard to get into that race anyway, but to be able to get into the lottery or win the lottery and be on the course and then be in that amazing scenery, I mean, it's a dream is what it is.
I've been in some amazing scenery, and if I'm bonking, my world gets pretty small. It exists. It's about 5 feet in front of me.
That's true.
3 feet wide.
You need to look up.
It happens to the best of us.
You know, should I go deep, cut thin to win, deep to weep? What
deep
letter
to weep?
You've never played a lot of cards, Scott. Here you go. I'm a letter D.
D. All
D
right.
D for Dawn. D for right. Done. D for
okay. This is
don't know.
This is gonna be
D.
This
for
is gonna be, this is gonna be very very simple.
Oh, good.
Doer.
Doer. Oh, I
a
love
person
it.
Who does, an actor or an agent. Doer.
And that's probably what I love about the community. They're full of doers. They're full of people that are
getting up when many are sleeping on a Saturday or a Sunday morning, and they're out there doing. And there are volunteers that are doing. And there are things that need to be done that aren't always easy, and nobody complains, and they just get it done. And hills are hard to climb, but it's done. And there's a lot of satisfaction of doing. And you go out and you run a morning run, and you're a doer. And when you're done, you feel great.
You're a dunner.
You're a dunner. And I just love doers. And I like people that solve problems. And I like to surround myself with doers, because doers have energy, and you can plug into their energy. And then you, too, are a doer. And I love that you picked that word. And I'm glad you did it.
I will dovetail on that, and then we'll leave Whitney to put the bookend on it. Ooh. But I also professionally, I work with people that are can-do attitudes. There could be 15 roadblocks in their way, and they don't once say, "This is why I can't do it." They think of, okay, so there's some challenges. I'm going to get it done anyway. I'm not going to wait for somebody to remove that. I'm not going to take. I'm going to take responsibility on myself, and I'm just going to go do it. And I see a lot of trail runners that have that same can-do attitude. If you're out on a long run or in a race, and someone needs help, you do it. You help them, right? And then on the flip side, I just want to put a caveat, because I'd had another experience just recently with someone that I was that I knew real well, that I finally realized I couldn't be around anymore because of this person's negative attitude about other people and about situations, and just always thought about the negative.
Poisoning the well.
Poison. It's poison, Freeman.
Yeah, it's not me, is it?
No.
Okay.
Has he run with you lately? I don't know.
It's
been a while, actually. Okay, Whitney, put a bookend on this. What are your thoughts about doer?
Well, mine is fairly similar, actually. I think doers tend to be why not people. So instead of people that would say, why? Like, why go do this? I think doers are the why not people. And it doesn't matter if you're running a 5K or if you're running a 50 miler, they're out there doing it. And I think they tend to be people that have those infectious personalities where, you know, like you guys were saying, you want to be around them and you kind of want to go along for the ride. Like, it doesn't even really matter if it's, like I said, a 5K, if it's something that they're excited about, or that they're going out to try your experience for the first time, then you really want to be part of that. And you can't help but get caught up in the excitement of it. So I think doers are the why not people, and just, you know, try to see how much they can fit in, how much they can accomplish, and how much they can do, and what little time we have here. So it's neat to see what people come up with and what people do, no matter what it is.
Whitney Powell is a doer. And she can be found at, give us your contact points.
Ironwillproductions.com. This will all be linked in the show notes. Instagram is ironwillwit.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
Scott, how do you know all this stuff? That's good.
I took notes, Freeman. Oh, it was the beginning of the podcast.
All right. And where else, Whitney? Your new
Facebook.
Your newest newest podcast is?
Well, My newest podcast. Am I allowed to
go ahead?
Him?
Go ahead, Whitney.
Is going to be Do Inspiring Shit with your very own Jimmy Dean Freeman. I'm also on the Women in Sports podcast at wispmedia.com. So there's a lot of places you can find me. I'm very accessible. I'm a real person. I like to talk to people. So if you have ideas, questions, comments, want to collaborate on anything, get a hold of me. I'd love to talk to you.
You want a film made? You'll do that too.
I will do that too.
Or if you need a passion coach.
if you need a passion coach, she'll help you.
We're passionate about passion.
Whitney, I think as a rookie to the Drop Bag podcast, you did phenomenal.
About halfway through, she went from rookie to veteran.
She did.
She only needed like a category or two. Yeah, she moved up quick. She's a doer.
Wow.
It's taken other qualified individuals maybe an episode or two. We won't mention any names, but Jimmy Dean knows who he is. You qualified in half a show.
Whitney.
Well, the honor that has been bestowed upon me is unbelievable, and thank you so much. And be sure to tell Jimmy that too.
So Whitney, I did take a note. Make sure that you forward me your mailing address because I heard that you wear pink and black. We have
a
ultra pink Trail Runner Nation trucker hat that we would like to send you as a parting gift for being such a good doer.
Oh my gosh, thank you. Thank you so much. I'm so excited.
Go out and wear pink trucker hats and do Moss.